Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Welcome. This is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1971 film Dirty Harry.
Yeah, we are.
Directed by Don Siegel, who also directed Escape from Alcatraz, Play Misty for Me, Two Mules for Sister Sarah, The Shootist, and Telephone.
He put his own movie, Play Misty for Me, in this movie on the marquee?
Yes, I'm sure. Yeah. I think it was the same year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's crazy.
Way to get some work done.
So, your history with Dirty Harry, with Harry Callahan. We must have taken this trip in the late 80s, right?
I think the mid 80s. Yeah, I was pretty little. When did the Deadpool come out on video? Because that would have been the time.
I think it must have been like 86, 85 or 86, okay. Something like that.
Yeah, so I was like 9 or 10.
I remember seeing in the theater Deadpool and thinking to myself, wow, Ronald Reagan could still star in a movie. If this was, you know, if Clint Eastwood's doing it, why not?
Right. Yeah, I think it was around that time that we were revisiting all of the Dirty Harry movies. Because I remember Daly from Tyne and Daly was in one of them, right?
Cagney and Lacey, yes.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Tyne Daly was the actress.
Yes.
Cagney and Lacey.
Yep.
Lacey.
Yeah, I think she's in the third one, maybe?
Okay.
I've watched the first two in the last 2 weeks.
Okay. Well, you are SOL for the others, by the way.
Okay. All right.
Because remember when I told you I was having trouble finding these and you were like, hey, they're on HBO Max.
Yeah.
They are not.
They're not anymore?
They are not. No, I ended up renting this through iTunes.
I bet you I have a copy of it. But I remember I had to search for them. I wonder if they just left recently.
Yeah. Did you watch them before New Year's?
I must have.
I'm concerned that they left on December 31st.
Okay. Well, that's. I'm sorry then.
No, that's fine. It's my fault for procrastinating.
Oh, that's. I feel bad. No, because I just came up with it like probably after the first. Like for reals.
It's fine. It was like $4. It's fine. I'm gonna be okay.
Okay. So.
But that wasn't a question I had for you though.
Okay.
I found this movie to be incredibly dark for long stretches, like so dark you could barely see anything. But you had texted me that the version on HBO Max was a beautiful transfer.
Yes.
Was that not your experience?
I didn't see it being. I mean, I know there were several intentionally dark scenes because a lot of it took place at night, and so it took place under the stadium and that kind of stuff. But no,
like he's getting beaten up in the alley, you could barely see anything.
I did not have that experience.
All right. Well,
did you? You said iTunes.
I'm glad I did not buy that version then.
Oh yeah. Wow. Interesting. So,
yeah.
What are your memories of it, and what did you think of it now? And actually, I guess again, was it worth $4? Maybe that's the question for the end. Whether it was worth it?
Yeah. My memory was that they were just kind of pretty over the top action movies. But you know, watching them as like a 10-year-old, you don't think about any of the sort of morality or ethics or politics involved in the movie. So I didn't have any of that baggage to watch this movie with. And I don't think I've watched them in the meantime. I think I've seen parts of the Deadpool. Because when Jim Carrey got really popular, that movie used to be shown on the movie channels all the time.
I bet, yeah.
But I think that was probably among the most campy of the Dirty Harry movies, right?
Well,
I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think so. I think they get progressively worse. But yeah. Again, I haven't seen those middle ones in a while.
Yeah, and I had no like history with like the real life Zodiac murders or anything, which I understand now is this movie is only loosely related to those. But yeah, so I didn't really have any memory of this movie at all. No negative memories.
No. So what'd you think about it this time?
I thought it was fine. It's sort of a difficult time in our nation's history to be watching sort of an almost like vigilante fantasy.
Yeah, there's that.
But I thought Clint Eastwood, who even though he's not a young guy in this movie, he looks so young.
Oh yeah.
Compared to how I think of him now, just so young. I thought he was really good. The villain of the movie was cartoonishly bad.
Did you recognize him?
Yeah, from Hellraiser.
Yes, right? Yes, he was yeah. Larry in Hellraiser. His name's Andrew Robinson. He's been in a lot of horror movies.
Yes, but yeah, he'll always be the guy from Hellraiser.
Also an over-the-top performance.
Of our household.
Hey, come on. I love Hellraiser. It's a great movie, but it's great.
Yeah. I think we watched it a few times when I was a little kid.
We must have. I'm sure we did.
There were a ton of people. Harry Callahan's partner, Chico.
Yeah.
He played Poppy on Seinfeld. He peed on Jerry's couch.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, tell me. I mean, this is a weird movie. It is so bizarre. I don't think it's a great movie.
No, I agree. I don't think it's a great movie either. I think it's a kind of a nihilistic movie though. It starts off with a shot of a tribute to all the officers killed in the line of duty in the city of San Francisco. And then it's kind of a weird indictment on the justice system.
Yeah. I mean, Harry Callahan is set up as pretty much the savior, right? He's the only one who's willing to do what it takes.
Yeah. Yep. He doesn't care necessarily about the rules.
Right.
Criminals are getting coddled. That kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yes, yeah, it is not. It is a weird time.
I mean, I know enough about our history that I know overall we live in really good times as far as like general crime rates, especially violent crime rates. Things are a lot more sensationalized nowadays, but I think overall we are living among some of the lowest violent crime rates in history. So this movie was certainly made at a different time in America, where there were, it was a few years even before like people like Bernie Goetz, right?
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, this is 1971. I got some of my history confused because, you know, I knew that it was Zodiac, but I thought the bus part of it was actually a reference to the Chowchilla kidnappings from that was 1976. So no, are you familiar with that kidnapping?
No.
I think it was two guys who took a bus load of 26 school children and a bus driver, ended up taking them hostage, drove them a couple hours outside of like San Jose or wherever Chowchilla is, and buried the bus underground. And they had to, like, the kids had to escape, and it's crazy. Yeah.
That seems like it would take a long time.
No, it was all pre, they found the suspect because he's the guy that had access to the construction equipment that could dig a hole that was roughly bus size that you could drive a bus down into from the construction site next door to where they found the bus.
Terrifying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess to be a little bit more succinct, I can imagine that at the time this movie came out, people were more open to the idea of seeing a on the edge vigilante cop as an unabashed protagonist in a movie.
Yeah.
I don't think that didn't really land probably the way it was intended in 1971, didn't really land with me, you know, in 2021. Overall, I think this movie was Clint Eastwood was pretty good. Maybe even great, in a role where he tried not to say anything. It's kind of his thing. And the movie, it cooked. I mean, it wasn't slow.
No,
part of that is plenty of things. They didn't spend time on things like ensuring that it made sense. I'm not mad. I watched it.
That's a great endorsement. That's the thing is that this, I think, was it's kind of just the evolution of his spaghetti western characters, or maybe again the timelines are weird. Maybe he did some of those even after this, but he doesn't say much. The thing at the end, spoiler for a movie that is like 50 years old almost, exactly 50 years old. It was the end of the movie where he throws his badge in the little lake or was it tailing pond or whatever it is. That was straight out of like a Western thing. Like he was a sheriff who's like disillusioned and had to gun down the killer in the town. And now he's not going to be the sheriff anymore, but he took care of business. Something like that. Which, by the way, Clint Eastwood didn't really want that to be the case. And the very next movie starts off as without referencing that at all. He basically just has a new partner. And I guess as a continuing thing, he's like, welcome to Homicide, kid. You know, and then, do they tell you about what happened to my other partners? Yeah, you don't want to be Harry Callahan's partner. But, yeah. I don't think this is as cartoonish. The next movie in the series, by the way, stars David Soul and Robert Urich. Who else was it? It's wild to see those guys. But anyway. And if anything, there's less talking in that movie by Clint Eastwood. There's a lot of looks to the camera like,
But, have you seen any interviews with Anthony Hopkins about his role of Odin?
No. Do tell.
He is hilariously savage about just like how bad the role is for a serious actor. He's like, it's great. You know, they have these elaborate costumes and you're not really on like a set. It's in front of a green screen and there's nothing there. And the lines, you say them and they don't actually mean anything. And it's pretty much no acting required. It's great. No acting required.
That's hilarious. Well, that explains a lot. yeah. So shall we dive into the plot?
I think we should.
I think we can yada yada some of it. By the way, they had thought about doing a big old car chase. You'll notice the absence of a serious car chase in this movie. The reason is because this is the same year that they filmed Bullet. It was primarily a car chase through San Francisco.
So and both Harry Callahan and Steve McQueen's character in Bullet were modeled after the same San Francisco cop, right?
Good question. I do not know.
The Zodiac cop.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Ruffalo played him in the Fincher movie.
Okay.
Tosky?
You're right. That sounds correct. I didn't do enough research for this movie. There was a lot of news this week that kind of got into the
yeah.
I was preoccupied.
It's January 8th as we're talking.
Yeah, sorry. January 2021. So,
yeah,
the movie starts again. By the way, the Lalo Schifrin score, this sounds like a cop movie. This is the quintessential cop movie score from the 70s. Yeah,
the score is fantastic.
Yeah. So we have a shot of the, again, that marble wall tribute to the officers killed in the line of duty in the city of San Francisco. And then we see the silenced barrel of a rifle. And a long, dark-haired Caucasian man, Andrew Robinson Larry from Hellraiser, staring down. Through the scope and the crosshairs, we see his target, a young, beautiful blonde woman swimming on a rooftop pool. He follows her for a little bit and then pulls the trigger, hitting her in the back. She flails in agony in the water, and the pool slowly fills with her blood as she dies. By the way, this is from IMDb's plot synopsis. I didn't write see if they even credited who wrote it, but it's got some interesting things here. So if I'm reading it word for word, you'll hear some exclamations that are from the author, not from me. But then we meet Inspector Harry Callahan, Clint Eastwood, who enters the rooftop pool area as the title cards roll. He inspects the dead body, looks up to the probable area of the shooter. Then he walks to the other roof. He finds a shell casing. A little bit of this is actually interesting procedure. Like, he picks the shell casing up with the pen. Later, when he does the drop, whatever, you see this going from place to place. And there's a lot of lingering on some police procedures in here. But then,
very little.
Yeah, but then he sees a piece of paper speared on a television antenna and realizes what it is. It's a letter from the Scorpio killer, very loosely based on the Zodiac killer, and he demands $100,000 to stop the killing spree, or he'll target either a Catholic priest or a... And then they use the N-word. So the mayor discusses his options with the police chief and Callahan's superior, who's Lieutenant Al Bresler, Harry Giardino. And the mayor calls Harry in and immediately asks what he's been doing. And Harry says, "I've been sitting on his ass in the mayor's office," because he's that kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't take shit from anybody.
That's right. He's well respected, but not necessarily loved. So he's also apparently the only one qualified to do anything serious or risky in this department.
Yeah, that's a running gag about his partners trying to figure out why they call him Dirty Harry.
Yeah. But he
never once considers that he's called Dirty Harry because he's corrupt.
Yeah, of course.
That's not the case. But it seems like something you would consider.
Like, well, yeah,
my new partner is someone called Dirty Harry.
To Harry's disbelief, the mayor agrees to lead Scorpio on for the time being to post a message to the newspaper as if they plan to pay him. And before leaving, the mayor tells Harry that he doesn't want the same kind of trouble that Harry's caused in the past. And Harry says he was trying to stop a rape, but hey, you know. Anyway, so across from the bank, Harry sits down to a hot dog lunch. And this is kind of a fun little scene where he recognizes a bank robbery in progress.
Yeah, I was really interested in talking to you about this scene.
Sure.
This was wild.
Oh yeah.
he doesn't even identify himself as a cop.
Oh no.
he stands in the middle of the street and just starts opening fire.
Well, and of course, you know, his 44 Magnum, the most powerful weapon, blah, blah, blah. Right. Yeah, that is.
Hold on, just one second. Sorry. Had to do some pet maintenance.
Yeah, it's okay. I hear you. Harry doesn't have a radio. So he tells the short order crook or whatever to call the police and say, there's a 211 in progress or whatever. And then he pulls out his 44 caliber Smith & Wesson Magnum pistol, which, by the way, is a ridiculous weapon for use in this situation. Again, I'm not a gun guy or whatever, but part of the reason why you wouldn't use this, you know, is it's like 6 feet long and it'd be hard to tote around all day long. But also because the chances of if you miss the target, the chance of just killing somebody outright is kind of a big deal. And there's also a chance that your round will go straight through the target and into somebody behind the target.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are all serious possibilities that should weigh on you. Although, again, 1971. So
they don't.
No, they do not. Oh, but we do have this whole thing set up where he's this huge action set piece or whatever, where he just blasts these people away and they hit a car flips over. And as Harry is still chewing on his hot dog, shooting a bunch of these guys, and then he strolls through the spraying water of a fire hydrant, and he's got blood on his pants that he's not too happy about. By the way, it was a beautiful scene. I don't know what the print that you watched was this, but you could see like the light filtering through the fire hydrant spray. It was just beautiful.
Yeah. The blood on his pants was super bright red.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There are a couple shots in this movie that are gorgeous.
Oh yeah.
We'll get to it later, but the shot of him just standing on the bridge as the bus is approaching.
Yes.
That is an iconic shot.
Oh yeah. Again, that's another Western movie kind of shot though, right?
Yes, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, we have Harry goes over and gives his, of course, speech. The I know what you're thinking. Did he fire six shots or only five? This, you know, again, it's a famous speech. It's a great little speech. He's got to ask yourself, does he feel lucky, punk?
Yeah, and this the do you feel lucky, punk? That's been. Not conflated, but it has been combined with the go ahead, make my day, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, I think most people misremember that those lines were said back to back, but go ahead, make my day wasn't even in this movie.
No, it was. That may have been actually the Deadpool. I'll have to look it up, but yeah.
No, it was before that.
Was it? Okay. It was
before that, yeah.
But, yep. So, and then, of course, the man surrenders and Harry picks up the shotgun and the robber says, hey, I got to know, because the characters in here, you know, I mean, the racial situation, what they were in 1971.
They're very broadly written.
Yes. There you go. there's the best way to say that. Yeah. So he's like, hey, I got to know. And then so he raises his gun and he points it at the guy and pulls the trigger and then laughs. Which, you know, it's, I'm sure in the theater, you, it's a great scene, you know? So Harry goes to the hospital and the doctor is sort of patching him up. And,
is that assault?
What's that? Pointing a gun at somebody?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. He's a police officer, so there's different rules. This is a bad week to talk about this sort of stuff, but you know, there may be a racial dynamic there, but yeah, no, actually. Yeah. If you point a gun at somebody and they feel scared, that is assault in Alaska. It's a felony. So then Harry goes to the hospital and he gets bandaged up by the doctor. And then the doctor tells Harry to have his wife help him treat his wound. Then he's like, ooh, sorry, man. So obviously we know something bad happened to Harry's wife. And then we have
I love the part in the hospital where the doctor asks him if he wants any anesthetic. And he just looks at her and goes, pain don't hurt.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Blah, blah, blah. The helicopter's making his rounds all over the city. Harry walks through the department next day and meets with the captain, who congratulates him on stopping the robbery. And then he's also giving Harry a new partner, Chico Gonzalez, played by Rene Santoni. And Harry Gripes does not want to have a partner, and that all of his partners always wind up in the hospital or dead. Yeah. The captain is unswayed by this argument.
It's not what you want to hear.
Yeah. So Harry and Chico do a little walk and talk, and then they talk to another cop, DiGiorgio. And Chico asks DiGiorgio how he got his name, Dirty Harry, and that DiGiorgio tells him that Harry's an equal opportunity bigot, hating every ethnicity equally. And Chico then asks how he feels about Mexicans, and Harry says he hates them especially. Not in those words, though.
Definitely not.
So, anyway, elsewhere in the city, and this is where you get the Lalo Schifrin score, even under my narration of this, would make this heightened scene. Elsewhere in the city, Scorpio is on another rooftop across from a church, reading a personal ad that contains the city's response to his ransom. Unhappy with the be patient message, he tears up the paper and opens his rifle case and begins spying down the neighborhood. And he sees a black man walking on the street, and he places his crosshairs on him. Now, this guy, the black guy, that he was the most stereotypical like gay guy in San Francisco in 1971, right?
It had to have been.
Yeah.
They didn't want to have any question for the audience.
Oh, yeah.
They wanted there to be any mistake that this was a gay gentleman.
Yes. Yep. Anyway, before he could take his shot, though, the police chopper spots him and he's forced to retreat. And that night, Harry and Chico are riding through the city complaining about how the chopper lost Scorpio. Over the radio, they hear a description of the sniper, and Chico immediately spots a man fitting the description and carrying a tan suitcase. So they turn around to follow him. They end up...
Actually, that's the only part of the description.
Pretty much, yes.
He just saw tan suitcase.
Yep. So, Harry...
Didn't that dude turn out to be Asian?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think in the real life, though... there were two cops that let the Zodiac killer go, or just like saw him pass by probably, but didn't stop him because the initial report said it was a black guy.
Yep.
So anyway, so Harry walks down an alley and he ends up climbing onto a trash can, looking into an apartment window, which, by the way, I had forgotten this whole scene. I mean, this is a weird scene.
It's a very weird scene. There is some gratuitous boobs just shoehorned into this movie.
Yes.
This is one of those occasions.
Well, and then Harry is accosted by the good guys, the guys in the neighborhood who sees this guy like peeping in on a half naked woman. And
I did like that. Her name was Hot Mary.
Yes.
Like it must be one of those ironic names.
Well, you know, she, anyway.
I mean, yeah, oops. I guess aesthetic values could be different 50 years later.
For every pot, there is a lid, right? Isn't that what they tell you? Harry realizes it's not Scorpio, but then he's attacked by a couple of men who thought he was a peeping Tom. And Chico ends up saving him from a big old ass whooping. And then this is where Chico jokes and asks.
Was it a big old ass whooping? It sounded like it. I couldn't see anything.
Yeah, sorry. To me, it looked like a serious ass whooping. Okay, so you have a picture of, like, what is it? Every Which Way But Up, or Every Which Way You Can, or Every Which Way But Loose? Every Which Way, Which Way But Loose. And because it's a background picture and there's something on your desk or something behind you that keeps like interrupting, what's hilarious is I'm getting like a little flash of something, which looks like we're watching an old movie and like you got a hair on the screen or whatever. So don't fix it. It's just, it's hilarious.
It's my microphone. It's not going anywhere.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm just trying to see if I can trigger it.
brings me back to the days where you'd see movies that weren't on such great prints. So, okay. Anyway, so Chico teases Harry about whether or not that's why they call him Dirty Harry. Just kind of fun.
I wasn't real impressed with, I guess, the level of police work here. Because at this point, they're just driving around looking for some dude.
With a tan suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, yeah, again, it's 1971. Who knows?
I can't imagine the real cop, Kosky, was very impressed by this portrayal.
Well, maybe not. But it turns out Harry's needed to deal with a suicidal man threatening to jump off of a building. Also an iconic scene. But as it turns out, again, in my mind, this was such a better scene than it turns out being on a rewatch. It's fine.
It was terrible.
But yeah, it's not great. But he does a counterintuitive job of negotiating the guy off the ledge.
Yeah.
So
it does remind me that Clint Eastwood can be very, very funny.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This, by the way, is where he tells Chico that how he got his nickname, was that he takes any dirty job that comes along. So the next day, Harry and Chico are
called. This scene just reminded me of how much better they did this in Lethal Weapon.
Oh, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Same scenario. Absolutely. 100%. Mm-hmm. But again, this was first. So yeah, got to do what you got to do. So the next day, Harry and Chico are called to the side of a dead body. A young black kid is found shot in the head. And as Harry and Chico are looking over the crime scene, the boy's mother tells them that the son was only 10 years old. And another police officer finds a shell case and confirms that the boy was killed by Scorpio. So Harry has a meeting with the chief, and they discuss a plan to capture Scorpio. They'll post highly visible policemen all over the city at high probability targets, but no policemen near the site where the chopper had spotted him the day before. And Harry and Chico will stake out. This is right, by the way, the sort of thing that they would also come up with on Barney Miller. They'd have Fish dressed like a lady who was going to be walking outside.
Yes.
Anyway, so Chico expresses his doubts that Scorpio will target the same area twice, but Harry says he believes the sniper will want to take out a priest. And since it was right across from the church, yeah. So that night, the two detectives are watching over the church. And Harry tells Chico that the priest of the church volunteered to be bait for the murderer. Also, would not happen today. With binoculars, Harry spies the entire neighborhood, including a nude woman and her two male companions. So, as he's watching the party, he notices that one of the nearby roof doors is now open. So, they're preparing to throw a spotlight on Scorpio, and Harry takes aim with his rifle. He fires but misses, and...
It's kind of underselling the... He's knowingly taking a break from his stakeout duties to explore the nuances of this polyamorous relationship happening in front of him.
Yes. Well, you have to investigate every lead.
He knows it's not a lead. He's just taking some me time.
Sure.
And then that's when he realizes that, oh shit, the door's open.
And by the way, Harry takes another example. Like, Harry has some sort of elephant rifle. But he is, it turns out, outgunned because Scorpio has a full-on machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have lots and lots and lots of gunfire due to that machine gun. Anyway, so they eventually, after this little shootout, they run down and they find Officer DiGiorgio leaning over the body of an officer that Scorpio apparently killed in his escape. And the next day, their captain tells Harry and Chico that Scorpio has kidnapped a 14-year-old girl, Mary Ann Deacon, and that he's buried her alive, and he wants $200,000 now, and he wants it by 9 p.m. And he says the girl will suffocate if he's not paid. Now, Harry says, hey, the girl is already dead. But Bresler tells him that the mayor has already agreed to pay, and he asks Harry to drop the money off, and tells Chico he's not allowed to help. Nothing weird about that. So Chico responds, no wonder they call him Dirty Harry. Always gets the shit end of the stick.
Yeah. This was the last of those running lines, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. It had worn out its welcome by this point.
Yeah. So, but Chico's going to help anyway. So Harry gets a microphone put on him so that Chico can follow him from a distance. And then Scorpio is going to run Harry all over town before he asks for the money to be dropped. And Harry also tapes a switchblade to his ankle. One of those groovy old-timey switchblades that have really long blades.
And which really offends the mayor, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep. And the captain tells Harry to play it straight and not try anything funny. So we have a marina and a payphone and we have a little exercise and blah, blah, blah. We get to a railroad station.
It was interesting to see how many movies that I grew up with that borrowed scenes from this movie in a way that I never realized before, like the Lethal Weapon scene with the suicidal man. Certainly borrowed something from this movie. And then there's like the whole like first act concept of Die Hard with a Vengeance is very reminiscent of this scene where Harry Callahan is having to run all over the city.
I don't think I've seen Die Hard with a Vengeance. Is that number 3?
It is.
Ah, Samuel L. Jackson?
Yeah.
Okay, I remember the poster. Don't think I saw the movie.
It's good. I believe it's on HBO Max.
if you want, I'll Venmo you
$4. Check it out while you can.
So, anyway, while running, Harry is accosted by 3 thugs who try to take the money bag, so that's kind of hilarious. And anyway, he ends up being delayed by that. So some man answered the phone before Harry can do it.
I did enjoy some of his insults. They didn't make any sense. He called someone a hammerhead in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Get out of the way, hammerhead.
Yeah. Again, the old days. So. Eventually, Harry is given instructions to run to Mission Davis Park and to meet him at the foot of the cross. Lots of cross things in this movie. Chico follows, but keeps a safe distance. And Harry is going through the park, and he's trying to give the chicken eye to anybody he sees. And he finds a man he thinks he might be a Scorpio. He sees a man who he thinks might be the Scorpio, but it turns out he's just a hustler trying to get a little action at the park. So Harry has to run him off. And when he makes it to the top of the hill, at the foot of the large stone cross, Scorpio shows up wearing a ski mask. And Scorpio disarms Harry and starts to beat him. And he tells Harry that he's changed his mind and decided to let the girl die. Now he's going to kill Harry too. But before he can, Chico comes and shoots at him, but misses. Scorpio and Chico exchange fire. Chico is hit in the chest. Harry pulls a switchblade from his leg and plunges it deep into Scorpio's leg. Scorpio screams and limps off, really actually selling the limping off part.
For the rest of the movie.
Yeah, he does a great job limping. Limp acting, this guy is great. So,
he's great at acting like he's had his skin flayed off.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and maybe he's got a brother who's into some real kinky shit.
Mm-hmm.
Harry ends up passing out after failing to shoot Scorpio, but Scorpio falls down the hill, and so Scorpio makes it to a hospital or like a vet clinic or something, right? I don't remember exactly. Maybe it was just a hospital, a little clinic.
Yeah, it was something that looked seedy, but legit enough.
Yeah. So, in his office the next day, the hot-headed Breslau is talking to the chief on the phone. The chief is not happy that Harry and Chico disobeyed orders. And Harry tells Breslau he'll quit when this is over, if that's what the chief wants. And they get a call from a doctor in an emergency room. The doctor reports treating a man with a stab wound in his leg. So, they go and talk to the doctor, who isn't very helpful, but he does remember that he's seen the man before. And he works as a groundskeeper at a nearby stadium. So they end up climbing the fence. Harry and DiGiorgio, by the way, this is the fat older guy, not Chico, end up climbing the fence out the side of the stadium and inspecting the grounds in the dark, which did not help Drew sprint at all. And Scorpio spies on them and ends off taking off running. And Harry chases him while DiGiorgio looks for a way to turn on the lights. And Scorpio is running, limping across the football field while Harry finally catches up with him and DiGiorgio hits the floodlights. Harry has his gun on Scorpio and fires, hitting him in the leg. The Scorpio sobs for help and Harry demands to know where the girl is. Scorpio yells that Harry tried to kill him, but Harry says, if I was going to kill you, your head would be splattered all over this field. Anyway, Harry wants to know where the girl is. The Scorpio says he wants a lawyer. And Harry then grinds his foot into the wound. And this shot is where the shot pulls away from them in the middle of the stadium. At dawn, Harry stands at a hilltop overlooking the Golden Gate Bridge. Behind him, officers are pulling the dead body of Anne-Marie Deacon out of the ground. So then Harry is called to a meeting with the assistant DA, and he's shocked and disgusted that the DA is going to release Scorpio because Harry's search of the killer's home was illegal. And the rifle that's a murder weapon is inadmissible as evidence, and the DA condescendingly chastises Harry about the suspect's rights, and Harry wants to know about the rights of the victims, but the arrogant and unfeeling DA doesn't care. That's the law. And then at the response to that, Harry says, then the law is crazy. Again, not a good week to be talking about.
Again, this scene really bothered me. They all know he's guilty. They all know he's a sick, murdering psychopath. It's not like the tracks were laid for Harry to be wrong, to have the wrong guy.
Oh, no, for sure.
Yeah, so the moral superiority that they're taking to talk down to Inspector Callahan was just weird.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. I guess I'm just picking nits in what's already really a cartoon of a story, but.
Oh, it gets more cartoony from here because Scorpio walks into a park in the middle of the day and immediately notices Callahan following him. So he sits at a bar and sees Harry watching him. And the next day, by the way, again, another gratuitous boobs bar. And then the next day, Scorpio meets with a tough-looking black guy in a rundown factory.
I forgot about these boobs. How many boobs there are in this movie?
A lot of boobs.
I forgot there's another one.
Yeah. So, anyway, so we don't know what Scorpio is up to, but whatever it is, he's paying for $200 for it. Turns out he's paying for Scorpio to, or for the guy to beat the crap out of the Scorpio. Out of Scorpio.
I like the Scorpio. It makes him sound more menacing.
It does. He'll wear a cape. And the next scene we see is Scorpio being wheeled down the hall of a hospital, talking to reporters and blaming the San Francisco police for his beating. He says Harry beat him up. And the chief meets with Harry, but Harry says no, he looks too damn good to have caught a beating from Harry himself. And the chief orders Harry to stop tailing Scorpio, and Harry leaves in a huff. And Harry visits Chico at the hospital where he's sitting outside with his wife. And Chico tells Harry that he's not coming back to the department. He's going to be a teacher instead. And he's wheeled off to physical therapy, leaving Harry and Mrs. Gonzalez to chat. And there's a whole conversation about how Mrs. Gonzalez doesn't want Chico to quit his job. But she'd be nervous every time he left and asked Harry if his wife felt the same. And Harry says no, because she's dead. She died in a drunk driving accident, though. I mean,
see, Lethal Weapon 2 stole this.
There you go. Okay. So when she asks him why he's still on the job, Harry says, I don't know. I really don't. So later that night, Scorpio enters the liquor store and chats with the shopkeeper.
That's not true, though. What's that? He knows why. He loves shooting fools.
Well, there's that. Yeah. It's the only thing he's good at. So, anyway, Scorpio is still all, his face is all beat up and stuff. So he's chatting about the owner, who is something of a celebrity for being robbed so many times, apparently. So he intentionally.
Yeah, by the way, the actor that plays the Scorpio, mm-hmm. He's a weird looking dude to begin with. He looks super odd with his like long hair in this movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's the only time I've ever seen him with long hair. And even so, when he's got like his face all mangled, he looks so bizarre as like, doesn't quite look like a human being.
Yeah.
It was very distracting.
Indeed. So Scorpio smashes a bottle over the shopkeeper's head, takes the gun, and then we see a school bus dropping children off at the end of the school day. And Scorpio climbs in the bus, pretending to be a school bus inspector. Again, the creepiest school bus inspector ever. And he pulls a gun on the driver, and then he starts. This is great because at this point he gets to really chew the scenery as being unhinged. In front of children, presumably. There had to be some children on the set when he's screaming.
Yeah, and until the mama's boy really started mouthing up, I was actually thinking, this is like the best behaved group of school bus kids ever.
That's true, yes. So, at City Hall, Harry's captain watches as Harry arrives, and he and the captain walk up to the mayor's office, and they discussed another note by Scorpio, and the mayor is preparing a jet for the killer. And then he takes a call from Scorpio himself, who tells him of the bus hostage situation. He forces the bus driver to confirm it over the phone, and he wants a jet and $200,000, and he's going to take the bus to the airport. So the mayor tells Scorpio he won't be harmed and asks Harry to take the money. And Harry refuses this and says, go find yourself another delivery boy. So back on the bus, Scorpio is the children singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat. And yeah, this is where that iconic scene of Harry standing on top of the bridge.
It was great. It was the best scene in the whole movie.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then we get some Yakety Sax stuff where Harry jumps on the bus and, you know.
Followed by some of the worst scenes in the entire movie.
Yeah, it's not great. So they're doing what I think was actually Fallout 3 had a big scene. Or maybe this just happens every time you have a construction site where you get to climb up those like the rock elevator treadmill things. So, gunfire. We don't know how many shots Harry's fired.
If you're in the business, I believe you call those conveyor belts.
Oh, there you go. Yes, they convey one thing from one place to another. Thank you. I'm not in the business.
Before that, I love that they managed to crash the bus in the only location in the Greater Bay Area where someone on top of a vehicle could be thrown off into a soft landing.
Yes. Dirty Harry is cool, but he's not invincible. So,
right.
Yeah. So, we have this whole little foot chase and conveyor belts, and, Scorpio grabs the boy and put the gun to his head. And Harry then drops his arm to the side when he's been told to drop his gun, but then quickly shoots Scorpio in the shoulder, knocking him backwards. And then Scorpio tries to reach for his gun, but Harry stops him and points the revolver at him. And then we get the same speech earlier about, did he fire 6 or only 5? Blah, blah, blah. Do you feel lucky? Well, do you, punk? And then Scorpio thinks for a moment and then giggles and reaches for his own pistol. So Harry fires and shoots Scorpio in the chest, and he falls backward in the water and floats there dead. The notes here say Scorpio had unwisely called Harry's bluff and paid for it with his life. So as sirens wail in the distance, Harry takes out his badge and pulls the gold star and throws it in the water. And the camera pans away from Harry as he walks away and the credits roll. So again, it's kind of a downbeat ending.
Yeah, I mean, an inevitable ending as far as the shootout.
Yeah.
But yeah, the throwing the badge in the water was weird and felt unearned.
Yeah, I don't quite get that. But again, I think it was a Western thing that I just don't understand. It may have been like a nod to a very specific Western movie, but I don't have that in my notes. So, again, the reason I wanted to talk about it is I thought, you know, it was obviously it was very influential because we've seen these scenes copied a bunch. And Clint mm-hmm. Eastwood is always a he is a screen presence. He's a movie star. He is the Tom Cruise of the 1970s, or maybe Tom Cruise is the Clint Eastwood of the 1990s and 2000s. But all in all, did you enjoy watching the movie?
I'm glad I watched the movie. I think this is one of those cultural touchstones. I think you have to have seen Dirty Harry if you're at all interested in movies. I don't know if I enjoyed it. This movie is super dated. The politics are super dated and hard to wrap your head around. The tone of this movie is really bizarre, but the performances are good. I mean, the dude who played Scorpio, way over the top, but you know, he was going for it. And Clint Eastwood is great. The score is good. So I don't know. This is a weird movie for me. Have you seen the movie 21 Bridges?
I have not.
21 Bridges is not, it's not a great movie. Jason would say that he would know beat for beat what was going to happen in that movie. So it's not breaking any new ground, but what it did do that I thought was pretty interesting that I was thinking about during this movie was the main character played by Chadwick Boseman is set up as a like a Dirty Harry type cop. Like he's known to be a shooter. He has something like 9 cleared shootings on his record. So when a robbery goes bad and a bunch of cops are killed, they bring him in because they expect that he's going to find the people and kill them instead of bringing them to trial. And that is a reputation that he struggles with in that movie. And he knows he's earned it, but he doesn't want that to be his identity. I'm making 21 Bridges sound way more nuanced than it actually is. But I was thinking about that aspect of the character in that movie while I was watching Dirty Harry. Cause I think that would have been a much more interesting take on the character. Cause Harry Callahan in this movie is a cop who, you know, toes the line, sometimes crosses the line, but doesn't worry about it, doesn't have any remorse about it, revels in it. He's known to be a shooter, and he leans into that reputation and he likes it. So he doesn't seem to have any sort of moral quandary about what he does.
But, and his bosses don't always expect him to do the other thing.
Right. Which is not, it's not intellectually honest.
No.
But,
it's evidence of bad administration.
Yeah. So Clint Eastwood has a ton of charisma and he's got a great screen presence, but the character is really one dimensional. He just does what he does. He just keeps moving ahead and he's going to kill Scorpio and he's not going to feel bad about it. And that's really evident from early on in the movie. And there's nothing really for him to grapple with. So I think it made this movie feel really shallow to me. Like there's a lot of things here that they could have done more with. So I think overall I was a little disappointed in this movie.
Have you seen The French Connection lately?
I've never seen it. I tried to watch it one time and I couldn't get through it.
Me too. I own it on Blu-ray. I think, maybe just a DVD, but, and I can't go through it. Cause I don't, it was too slow and I could not identify in any way with, the main character, even though he's Gene Hackman, who was also a really amazing screen presence. But here's the question I have for you. Can you imagine, it could have just as easily been, can you imagine going to a drive-thru and getting chicken from Dirty Harry's Chicken? Because that's what Popeyes is named after, is Gene Hackman from The French Connection. Popeye Doyle. Oh,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the comic book character. It has everything to do with Gene Hackman in this sort of action movie. The action thriller from, the early 70s. Maybe the same year as this. But, yeah. But it could have easily been Dirty Harry's Chicken.
I wouldn't want to go to any restaurant called Dirty Anything.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, or Dirty or Harry.
Yes.
Yeah. So, oh, well. Yeah, that's so. Yeah, that's what that's Dirty Harry.
What was your overall take on it?
Well, I thought it was I enjoyed it. It did not plod along. It moved pretty well. It was cartoonish in parts. There's a lot of Clint Eastwood capitalizing on being Clint Eastwood, looking straight to camera. But yeah, it works. I don't know. It was fine. I mean, again, it's not going to be ever my list of favorite movies. I don't think it's on my list of favorite movies. It won't be now, but yeah, let's
check the tape.
If it were available for you, free of extra charge, to watch the second movie in the series, I would recommend that. Because yeah, it has, Robert Urich, David Soul, and I'm sorry, Hal Holbrook as well.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And this movie may be completely a victim of time. Like maybe this movie was, in 1971 was shocking in a way that made it have more impact. But in the time since, that line has been pushed so much further that nothing in this movie really seems all that shocking. There were no clutch the pearls moments in this movie, but that might not have been the case in 1971.
Yeah, I think you're right, because surely the jumper scene was iconic. And that was a big deal. That was one of those things that had never been done that I know of. And have him being, I guess, kind of an anti-hero. I mean, I guess that's a 70s thing. But it's also sort of a Western thing, too. So I still think that this is a Western that was camouflaged as a police procedural from the urban city. Urban city.
I don't think he was an anti-hero in this movie at all.
I think you're right. I think he was just a hero.
Yeah, he didn't have to grapple with anything. Anytime anybody was upset about what he did, it was so obvious that the perspective of the film was that the other people were obviously incorrect.
Yeah, actually reminds me of Star Chamber too, another Hal Holbrook movie. With Michael Douglas, right? I don't know. Anyway, yeah. So, have you and Jason discussed it? So, this is where I'm going to put in some housekeeping. This is the 8th of January. We're recording this, so it's been a busy week in the politics of the United States of America. What with the Electoral College making it official that Joe Biden will be the next president of the United States on the 20th of January. Donald Trump eventually conceded that he will, there will be a smooth transition of power. But there was some excitement in the middle of that.
TBD, y'all.
Yeah.
But what, more importantly, you got a dog.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Housekeeping. I got a dog. We found a dog we rescued a dog from the animal shelter. Dog is I don't know quite how old, but probably 2 to 3 year old Chihuahua Pembroke Corgi mix. His name is Maui. He was an intact male until the day after we adopted him. And now he is a not intact male.
And you keeping the name?
Yeah, we're keeping the name. He seems like a Maui. It's fine.
Right. You're welcome.
It's not my pick. Exactly. Yeah. Yep. I have been calling him her because I've only had her pets for the longest time. But then again, I also call my daughter Drew. So, you know, as I'm getting
old. It's a not unpopular girl's name.
Yeah. Yeah. No, specifically, it's because I once had this younger brother. Anyway, I'm not pronouncing it right. I think I call her Drew.
Two people in your life, you've yelled at a lot.
Yeah. It's both not earned, sadly. Oh, well, I'm not the hero in my story. Or an anti-hero. But yeah, no, we got a dog. Dog is pretty great. Dog is not barky and yippy so far, which is nice, even though you would think that being two breeds of small dogs, yippy dogs together, it would be a problem. But nope. Got a very distinct voice, though. Very kind of high-pitched. I thought she was going to be a howler, but nope. She just whines at a particular frequency. But we tried to get her to howl today in the car, and she wouldn't do it. Sorry, she is good. A he. Yeah, no, it's good. Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm waiting to have Grandpa teach her bad habits just in one day tomorrow. So
my wife, she did this with our last dog, Alice, and she's been trying to do it with Bruno, but I've taken the Eric stance, and I try and squash it as quickly as possible. But she's tried to teach the dog to bark on command by giving it a command to sing.
Ah.
And I'm not okay with it.
But
like, I don't want the dog to bark under any circumstances. Can't stand it. We've been in Willow for, sorry to hijack your dog
story. Oh, no. I'm waiting to see if this is working out for you.
We've been in Willow for most of our time lately. So our dog has been used to more isolation. We're back in Anchorage now. And so now he's starting to go apeshit anytime a car or anything drives by one of our windows because he's not used to it. So we're having to re-socialize him to living in the big city now. But yeah, so I'm like, every time she tries to get him to sing, I'm like, no. And I interject my, sometimes physically get between them to break that training. I'm like, no, that is not going to be a thing. We have young girls who would find it very amusing, I'm sure, to give him that command all the time. I'm like, nope. When he barks, I want it to be for a reason that we need to pay attention to and no other reason.
Good for you. The night we adopted, we picked up the dog after getting, because we adopted it technically on one day and then picked it up the next day. And after the neutering, but Kelly's like, hey, what do you want to get for dinner? I said, please God, we're not going to get something with French fries because we can't throw French fries at the dog on day one. It will drive me crazy. She's like, fine. And I can't remember what we did get, but there was some sort of people food. And so Journey was narrating to the dog. Journey, by the way, is loving it. Journey's getting a lot out of this dog, which I appreciate. Actually, she told you earlier that that the dog nearly got away yesterday on her first day because we put a harness on the dog and the dog squirted out of the harness because it was too big. Mm-hmm. And she was freaked out. But immediately what she did was she grabbed the dog, picked it up, even though the dog was like struggling and probably scratching her and biting her a little bit. She hugged the dog and walked the dog all the way to the door. Although she was super scared and upset about possibly losing her dog forever. It was like, yeah, no, you did the right thing. And then we had a discussion later in the night on a longer walk about, so now who comes first? She goes, me. I said, yeah. Yeah, don't jump in front of a car to save the dog. You come first. Save yourself, then save your dog. But she's like getting up. She wants to go on walks with the dog, which is great because it's the only exercise this kid will do voluntarily. So I think it's going to work out pretty well.
Nice. Good. It's a good size, it sounds like.
It's 20 pounds. Great.
Yes. That's so lovely.
The dog is probably going to be, when we take it for the checkup, it'll probably be riddled with a disease or something that'll be very expensive, but I don't care. It's fine. It makes me wonder, like, because the dog was in the shelter in 2019 at some point, and then is now in the shelter since like December 28th. And we're thinking that maybe it was claimed the first time by the owner and it just wasn't claimed this time by the owner. But it's like, it's weird. It's like, what's wrong with the dog? How is the dog broken that somebody, so Journey thinks it's because the dog is an escape artist. Anyway, but the reason I bring this whole thing up about the French fries and stuff is that the dog was coming to me with this puppy dog eyes to get food. I'm like, nope, not getting food from me. And so Journey's like, Maui, don't worry about it. Just keep asking him and he'll cave eventually. Nice. At least I have a reputation. So. Anyway.
Ouch.
Yeah. Out of the mouths of babes. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not.